The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now we're moving on to the entertainment preview, as we do at this time each week. Delighted to say I'm joined by the Business Post magazine editor Nadine O'Regan and Irish Times film critic Donald Clark, two regulars at this time of the week. Good afternoon to both of you. Nadine, I'm going to start with you before we get some of your tips as to what to watch this week. There's a big announcement for fans of Normal People because the casting of Sally Rooney's novel Conversations with Friends was announced, and I expect we'll be all watching this when eventually comes out, thanks to the success of Normal People.
Yeah, absolutely. So they made the casting announcements earlier this week, which is very fitting, actually, because Sally Rooney turned 30 at the weekend. And I suppose in the process made a lot of us think about what we've done with our lives, given how successful she has been. But Conversations with Friends is the first novel that she published. It's a fantastic book. It's the story of Frances, a 21-year-old college student who's navigating a lot of different relationships through the course of the book. And Normal People, the second book, obviously went on to become so successful when it was made into the TV series by Lenny Abramson and Element, and is nominated actually for Golden Globes. So understandably now, all eyes are turned on who is going to be cast in the small screen version of Conversations with Friends. And it turns out that Alison Oliver, who's an emerging talent from Lear Academy, is going to play that lead role of Frances. And Joe Alwyn, also known as Taylor Swift's other half, is also going to be in there as Nick. And also Jemima Kirk, Sasha Lane are also in there. And I think, it won't be on our screens until next year, so there's going to be a bit of a wait. But it is fair to say it's highly anticipated.
And Lenny Abramson involved again?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also working alongside the writer Mark O'Halloran, who was also involved with Normal People. And Maeve McHugh is also in there as well. And it'll be, I believe, a 12-part drama. It's just one of those things. I suppose at the moment, they've had to freeze so many productions because of COVID. And, I would imagine that filming for this is going to be extremely difficult. But at the same time, they're going ahead, they're finding ways to film safely, and it will be, because one of the things I suppose about recommending movies and TV is so often now we're having to go back in time. So many of us are rewatching old series, so to have this to look forward to will be really great.
Okay, well we're gonna crack on now with what to look forward to. But just very briefly, Donald, to yourself, some other big news this week in relation to Disney Plus.
The next stage of the streaming wars has opened up with Disney Plus introducing the Star Hub to the package this week, which lands on Tuesday, requires no extra fee. If you have it, it will arrive like magic. Basically, we're looking at a bit of sort of brand management here, as they're picking up a good bit of the material they acquired when they trousered 20th Century Fox a year or two ago. And the hub, the Star Hub, is where they're putting what you might say the more adult corner of their digital space. I don't mean that in a racy sense.
But it's Disney really Plus for grown-ups now.
Well, yes, one could put it that way. That, I mean, it's certainly fewer of the franchise stuff, less of the Walt Disney stuff that we remember as directed at family entertainment. I believe there are about 75 series have landed, about 280 films. So in terms of series, you've got stuff which largely from Fox, things like Atlanta, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Family Guy, that great documentary series OJ Made in America is there. The film is an interesting one. They've delivered 280 films, and sort of in a stroke, they've almost surpassed Netflix in terms of decent films from before 2000. They haven't got anything like the number of films Netflix have in total, I should say. But because they've dumped all these, dumped's the wrong word, because they've given us all these old 20th Century Fox titles, you suddenly got things from things like the entire Die Hard series, Pretty Woman, MASH, the original Planet of the Apes. Though, interestingly, looking down at it, you don't get anything before the very early 60s. The earliest film I can see they put there is the Cleopatra, the Taylor Burton Cleopatra from 1963. You haven't got The Grapes of Wrath, which is a Fox film. You haven't got All About Eve. You haven't got My Darling Clementine, John Ford films. those things have not landed. So I wonder what's going to happen with those. I assume at some point there's going to be a plan for those older films to either find a place in the Star section or their own section on Disney Plus.
Okay, Nadine, let's look forward to what's new. And I'm going to begin with Apple TV. Those that have Apple TV, I don't. But anyway, Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. That's a fair mouthful. It's a comedy, though, and Jamie Dornan's in it.
Yeah, it is so much fun. It's Jamie Dornan in what some critics have been calling his first intentionally comic role. And that's, of course, coming after Wild Mountain Thyme, for which he had some pretty harsh reviews, I think it's fair to say. But this is a new comedy developed from a screenplay by Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo, who you'll know from, well, of course, they did the screenplay as well for Bridesmaids, which was such a brilliant film. And look, if you like Bridesmaids and if you like daft kitsch comedy, then this is for you. It is so fun, it's so escapist, and it's basically Wiig and Mamolo as Barb and Star, who they're two best friends. They're, you know, they've gone past their first flush of youth, and they decide that they're going to travel to Florida on vacation. But before long, they get tangled up in a terrible plot, which involves Jamie Dornan, who, you know, essentially there's an evil plot where, I don't want to give too much away, but they have to both get everything back on the right track again, but also there's Jamie is the love interest for both of them, and there's some very, very funny scenes where they ingest a lot of alcohol, take some peculiar substances, and before you know it, they're doing song and dance routines on the beach, and it's just so much fun.
And Donald, I see here where there's a new Netflix documentary on Pelle, and I'm kind of thinking, is there anything more about Pelle that we haven't heard or seen before? Because he was a fantastic footballer, but unlike George Best and Maradona, his contemporaries of that time and a little bit after that in Maradona's case, they were both colourful characters. Pelle was a nice guy.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? You don't get the rewards in terms of coverage and in terms of people writing, you know, 700-page tomes about you. If you behave yourself, people are always a bit more interested in the sports people who don't behave themselves well. I think there is something to look forward to here, which is an extensive interview with Pelle. He hasn't been shy over the last 60, 70 years, but it's not often you get to see an extensive interview as part of a documentary with a sportsman of Pelle's standing. And it's interesting to think, I mean, you talk about those other players, and it's sort of an irony, though, those greatest footballers in the world that emerged in the 50s through to the 80s, I mean, there were three that really jump out. One is George Best, the other is Maradona, and there is Pelle. And Pelle, who is the oldest of the three, is the one still with us. The film makes an interesting comparison with the Maradona film by Asif Kapadia we had about 2 years ago. And it's not as thrilling as that for two reasons. Firstly, actually, it's down to the filmmaking. Kapadia is a bit of a genius, and he knew how to cut like a magician. And so that kind of flowed with an incredible excitement you only get from a really remarkable filmmaker. But secondly, again, yes, he is a less volatile character who led a less tempestuous life. He's a civilized man who got through a pressurized life with great dignity. We do hear a little touch of controversy from regarding tensions with the less celebrated players who are sort of blown out by his celebrity. But it is a smoother ride than the Maradona film. I think the two things that make it worth watching, firstly, the fact, as I say, that you get to see Pelle talking contemporarily today, what he looks like and expressing his views at a great age. But mainly it is for the footage, if we're honest about this. In the same way that you watch a great music documentary, a large part of it you're watching it to see the band perform. It's great to see this footage nicely restored on Netflix, broadcast into your home. It's really stirring stuff to look at after all these years.
All right, Jay, he's 80 years of age now at this stage. Nadine, just back to you. I know that you quite enjoyed the Dig, I think, which is a British period drama. And, you know, the period dramas are in with Bonfires of Destiny and Bridgerton, to name but two. But there's one controversial one I know you want to talk about.
I suppose just more to say that it's there. It's finally out. Sia's Music. It's a... It's essentially a film that has attracted huge controversy, made by the singer-songwriter Sia in her first directorial role. And really, one of the reasons, I suppose, for people who wouldn't know, the reason it has attracted so much controversy is because she took a decision to cast Maddie Ziegler in the lead role of the character Music. And Music is a young woman with autism. Maddie Ziegler is a neurotypical person, and people in the autism community have very vociferously complained about this decision, saying that the film could perpetuate harmful stereotypes. Mm. And actually, when the film came out, I think first in Australia, it very quickly followed that many people did find that they were very offended by the way in which Sia chose to portray that character. Now, the thing about the film is, I suppose, you know, looked at with, you know, if you're trying to be kind of charitable about it, like, there are things about it that are, in fairness to Sia, very good. There's a lot of brilliant music scenes where there's song and dance spectacles. Kate Hudson has actually been nominated for a Golden Globe for her part in the film. She plays the character Zoo, who is the older sister, her half-sister to Music, and she winds up taking care of her, and she is a newly sober drug dealer, and she's just so flamboyant and brilliant in the role. But the film itself is just rife with problems. So it's one of those ones that I think people are curious about, but even the makers of the film have come back and said, look, we've listened to the criticism, and they are actually going to remove some scenes in future edits of the film to better reflect the views of people in the autism community.
Sorry, all right, very interesting there on that. I just had my mic muted there. But Donald, just back to so-called terrestrial television for people that don't have all the apps and all that. And I know you're going to look forward to this. And I actually saw James Nesbitt on with Graham Norton a few weeks ago talking about this. And I said, this looks interesting. Bloodlands.
Yeah, Bloodlands. My first thing looking down at the press stuff on Bloodlands, which I had not seen yet, but I shall be tuning in with great interest, tonight, I think it is, on BBC One.
9 o'clock.
9 p.m. 9 o'clock, is the cast. It's like, I mean, there must have been like nobody left in to have a drink in any theatrical bar in Dublin or Belfast whenever this was being shot. It's got James Nesbitt, Lorcan Cranitch, Charlene McKenna, Lisa Dwan, Lola Pettigrew, Susan Lynch, legend, Flora Montgomery, and others I've forgotten. I mean, it sounds like the towering inferno of gritty British procedurals and as regards the casting of Irish talent. It sounds interesting. It's set in and around modern-day Belfast, written by Chris Brandon, who I am reading in the notes grew up near Strangford Loch, which is where the action begins with the discovery of an abandoned car. He's written for Red Rock, among other things. James Nesbitt plays DCI Tom Brannock, who's formerly in the RUC, now in the PSNI, and is, as detectives tend to be in dramas set in Northern Ireland these days, haunted by ghosts from the Troubles, as he's disentangling all these contemporary complications. It's one of the name that's been most bandied around in terms of when not mentioning the cast is Jed Mercurio, who is not actually a writer or did not seem to have devised it, but his production company is behind it, and he's the guy who gave us Line of Duty and The Bodyguard and so forth, who's a very reliable pair of hands. Looking at the trailer, I'd say it does look like it's made great use of its locations. I was like DiCaprio pointing at the telly, that internet meme, as it was on, saying, look, there's Queens, there's somewhere else in Belfast and so forth. So I'll be unbearable watching it when it's actually on.
Right, well, hopefully it doesn't take from your enjoyment as such. If you just move away from the dialogue. We're going to leave it there. I know, Nadine, your television pick for the week is Friday on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Grayson's Art Club, to give that a shout out as well. But I'm afraid we've run out of time, and we're going to leave it there for today. Donald and Nadine, thank you both very much for joining us on the programme.